नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Krishna, sorry, from 3rd canto, 7th chapter, 19th verse, which figures in an article written by His Holiness Giriraj Swami, which has recently appeared in Back to Godhead. Yat sevaya bhagava bhagavata kutastasya madhudvishaha ratiraso bhavetivra padayor vyasanardhanaha. Translation and purport by Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: by serving the feet of spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Purport by Srila Prabhupada: the association of a bona fide spiritual master like the sage Maitreya can be of absolute help in achieving transcendental attachment for the direct service of the Lord. The Lord is the enemy of the Madhu demon, or in other words, is the enemy of the suffering of his pure devotee. The word Rati Rasaha is significant in this verse. Service to the Lord is rendered in different transcendental mellows, relationships, neutral, active, friendly, parental and nuptial. A living entity in the liberated position of the transcendental service to the Lord becomes attracted to one of the above mentioned mellows, and when one is engaged in transcendental loving service to the Lord, one's service attachment in the material world is automatically vanquished. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Rasa Varjam Raso Patsya Param Drishtva Nivartate. So Hare Krishna, all of you are welcome to our Sunday feast program at Shri Radha Gopinath Temple. At the outset, I would like to thank the temple authorities, especially His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu, for giving me this opportunity to render some service to the Vaishnavas gathered here. Today I want to share with you some thoughts on pleasing Vaishnavas, especially one spiritual master, by being their servant by service. I would like to very candidly admit that I was inspired by this article by His Holiness Giriraj Swami, and therefore I thought I should speak something about service and who is a good servant. Now, in Krishna consciousness, all the time we are talking about being a servant, dasa, or we talk about how to serve. So this is our favorite topic, and in fact all of us are also named as dasa. So dasatva bhava is the main ingredient in Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, in his very beginning of the Science for Self-Realization, he writes that all of us, we are always wanting to render some service to someone at any given time. Either we render service to our family, wife, children, so on and so forth, or to the society, or we render service to the country. And Prabhupada writes, if you have no one to serve, sometimes we serve our pet cats and pet dogs. So serving is our inherent nature. It is our constitutional position. So the question arises is that when we serve our family members or the society or the country, do we get joy out of it? Do we get satisfaction out of it? So Srila Prabhupada says that in spite of serving to the best of our ability, we are not satisfied. We are not satisfied when we are serving, and the person who is served is also not satisfied. There is a temporary feeling of satisfaction, satiation, but we are most of the time dissatisfied. And on the material platform, in fact, all through our life, we keep on serving people, but there is no joy in it. There is only frustration. What is the reason for this frustration? So Srila Prabhupada, in his very, very specific way, gives an answer for this reason. Why are we not satisfied doing what we are doing all through our life? The reason is, Rupa says, that our service is not being rendered or is not being properly directed. We are serving, somebody is being served, but that service is not properly directed. So Prabhupada gives a couple of examples. He says that if you want to render service to a tree, for example, we must water the root. So roots must be watered if you want to render service to the tree and nourish it. If instead we pour water with a hose pipe on the leaves or on the twigs, the tree doesn't get nourished. So service is being rendered. When we are hosing it out with water, service is being rendered. But the service is not being properly directed. So similarly, if we want to serve our body, so we have to serve food to the body. Now, if the food is served to the stomach, then it becomes proper service. The food is being directed to the right place where it is going to be converted into nutrients and it will nourish the entire body from which we will derive energy. But if instead that food is served elsewhere, then the purpose is not served. So one thing is very clear, that all of us are prone to serving, but our direction, we do not direct the service properly. So similarly, Srila Prabhupada says that if you want to completely satisfy ourselves, satisfy the very core of our being, then we have to serve the right person. Our service has to be directed to the right authority. And with that, Savai pumsa paro dharma yato bhakti adhokshaje ahetuki apratihata yayatmasu prasidati. So it is the supreme occupation of every living entity to serve the supreme Lord and no one else. And if we serve him in an uninterrupted manner and without any purpose, without any motivation, ahetuki apratihata yayatma suprasidati, then the very core of our being is satisfied. We don't have to go in for worship of demigods. We don't have to go in for any other type of worship. Simply try and please the supreme personality of Godhead and everything is achieved. In fact, dasatva is the very foundation of Krishna consciousness. The supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is non-different from Krishna, he says that I am not a Brahmana, I am not a Kshatriya, I am not a Vaishya, I am not a Shudra, I am not a Brahmachari, I am not a Grahastha or a Vanaprastha or even a Sannyasi. What is my identity? Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Bhartrur Padakamala Yoho Dasa Dasanu Das. So that is the identity. So the scriptures are telling us that our true identity is not to boss over material nature, but to be able to serve the Supreme Lord Krishna and also to serve his servants. That is our occupation. And in the verse which is from Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very, very clear. It is mentioned that by serving the feet of the spiritual master, who is the topmost Vaishnava, who is the transparent via media, we actually are successful in serving the Supreme Lord himself. So it is our constitutional position. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami, he said, Jivera Swarupa Hai Krishnera Nityadas. So it is our constitutional position to serve the Supreme Lord Krishna. There is no other purpose. Now, the question that may arise in our mind is, where is Krishna? Srila Prabhupada asked this in Science of Self-Realization. Where is Krishna? I shall surrender to him and I will serve him. But Prabhupada says, no. The process is that we must first surrender to Krishna's representative and then surrender to Krishna. That representative of Krishna is none other than the spiritual master who comes in parampara. Evam parampara praptam. So he comes in parampara, and this such a spiritual master is to be served, and then through him he teaches us how to serve Krishna. So the process is that way. Not that directly we are able to serve Krishna. He is adokchaja. He is beyond our senses and therefore not directly accessible to us. It is the spiritual master who tells us how to serve Krishna. So we should never think that on our own we can access Krishna. Not possible. We have to approach to the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada time and again in his books clarifies that spiritual master is not God. He is not Krishna. In fact, Srila Prabhupada drew out several of his disciples who wanted to say that he is God. He said, nothing to do with you. Get out of my system. Because Srila Prabhupada said that, I am not God. I am your guru. I am your spiritual master. But the spiritual master is as good as God. He's not God, but it's as good as God. So Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna is the worshipable God. He is Bhagwan, full of all the opulences. He is the Purna Purushottam Bhagwan. And Guru is the worshipper God. Worshipable God versus worshipper God. Sevak Bhagwan, one who serves the Supreme Lord Krishna. So you have to understand, therefore, the supreme position of Guru. So he is not God, but he is as good as God. So it is described when we sing every day morning Samsara Davanala prayers, we say Sakshadharitvena Samasta Shastre. So all the scriptures say that the spiritual master is as good as God, but not God himself. And the scriptures virtually tell us that you have to approach a spiritual master if you really want to get Krishna Bhakti, if you want to get knowledge about the Supreme Lord Krishna. You have no other way except, save and except, to approach the spiritual master. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnanina tattva darshinaha. So Krishna very emphatically tells Arjuna, he tells him that just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service to him. So the self-realized soul can impart knowledge to you, unto you, because he has realized the truth. So he becomes a transparent via media to give us spiritual knowledge. On our own, we cannot acquire it. If our hands and legs get broken, we go to an orthopedic surgeon. Something happens to our eyes, we go to an ophthalmologist. So there is an expert to help us with the bodily problems. Similarly, there is an expert who helps us with our spiritual problems. We are in a diseased state of mind, and to cure us of this disease, we have to go to the spiritual master who can give us spiritual knowledge. So tad vidyanartham Sri Guru Meva Abhigachet. This is the verdict of the scriptures. We have to approach the spiritual master. So the exalted position of the spiritual master, who is a Vaishnava, who teaches us Krishna Bhakti, must never ever be underestimated. We must always understand that his position is very, very great. And therefore it is an offense to disobey the spiritual master. We are totally destroyed if you disobey the spiritual master. So in the morning prayers again, we sing, Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, Yasya aprasadat nagati kutopi. So by the mercy of the spiritual master, we get the benediction from Krishna. And if we displease him, we are simply nowhere. Nagati kutopi. We are virtually stranded. So therefore, it is important that we understand that we have to approach a spiritual master who comes in parampara and get his guidance. So the question comes, how do we approach a spiritual master? So in our life, we require role models to understand almost everything. For everything, we want to have a role model. For a teacher, or for an actor, or for sportsman, cricketer, for everything we have a role model. So similarly, we have role models in our scriptures. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in Chaitanya Charitamrut, we have role models. We have a role model for how to approach the spiritual master also. And the best role model that everybody knows is one of Narottam Das Thakur, coming from a princely background, whose birth was predicted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He predicted that a person called Narottam is going to be born at such a place. Not only that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invested his prema bhakti to be kept in fixed deposit for several years until Lord Nityananda Prabhu gave it to him after several years. So a born devotee, this was Narottam Das Thakur. Not only that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in his dream and instructed him that you should go to Loknath Goswami, my dear disciple, and take initiation from him. So Narottam Das Thakur was very pleased. He went, he approached Loknath Goswami in Vrindavan. And after approaching him, he found that Loknath Goswami was very resistant. He did not want to take any disciples at all. So time and again, Narottam Das Thakur would go, approach, plead with him. We are talking about the approach part of it. It's approaching him and pleading for guidance, spiritual guidance. But Loknath Goswami was very, strict about it. He said, no, nothing doing. And then Narottam Das Thakur, coming from such an aristocratic princely background, started performing the most menial service that one can ever think of. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. He started performing wonderful menial service. And what was that? That every day Loknath Goswami would go to a particular spot to evacuate early in the morning. And Narottam Das Thakur would go there and clean up the entire place. This happened day in and day out. Almost service continued for a year. Of course, Loknath Goswami came to know about it. But still, he was not willing to give initiation to Narottam Das Thakur. So, one should not take initiation for granted. We get it, but it's our good fortune, but one should not take it for granted. And after that, again, Lord Chaitanya appeared in a dream and then ordered Loknath Goswami to take Narottam Das Thakur as his disciple. And thus, he was initiated. So, this is an example for us to understand that what should be our attitude and approach while going to a spiritual master. It is humility. Trinadapi Sunichena. That humility should be there when we approach a spiritual master. So we also see the same humility in Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Thakur when he approached Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Thakur was a great, he's guru of our Param Guru, Srila Prabhupada. Great personality, very learned, very brilliant in the Shastra. And he approached Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was not at all learned, who could not even write. As they say, Kala Akshar Bhains Barabar. He was in that state. But spiritually, he was a giant, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And time and again, Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Thakur, in great humility, pleaded with him to take him as his disciple. A stage was reached when he said that I'll give up my life if you don't take me. Because there is no point in my living if you don't take me as disciple. So such is the importance that is attached to approaching a spiritual master and becoming a disciple. So that is the way we have to render service to the Supreme Lord also, through the spiritual master and through the Vaishnavas. So a question may arise in our mind as to who is a good servant. Whether he is a servant of a king or whether he is a servant or a disciple of spiritual master, what is the criterion for deciding? So, we find that in Valmiki Ramayana, the Supreme Lord, Prabhu Ramchandra himself, speaks about classification of who is a good servant. So I'd like to share some of this information with you. So, who is a good servant? Now, as you are all aware, when Mother Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, it was not known to Ramchandra, Prabhu Ramchandra, or to Sugriva where Sita had been taken. So Sugriva had befriended Prabhu Ramchandra, they had become friends, and Sugriva had promised that I will send my monkey army, I will divide them and send them in all directions, south, north, west, east, and some or the other locate Mother Sita. People didn't know where Lanka was. In those days there was possibly no TV where you could get all pictures of various places. Nevertheless, it was a great struggle. The monkeys who had gone down south, headed by Angada and Jambavan and of course Hanumanji, all of them, they went down south, and it was Hanumanji who eventually crossed the ocean, 100 yojanas, he jumped across, and on the way he faced so many problems, and he passed through all those problems, and finally in the vast sprawling area of Lanka, he succeeded in locating Mother Sita, and then communicating with her, and then he jumped back and came and met with Prabhu Ramchandra. So when Hanumanji gave his report to Prabhu Ramchandra, at that time Prabhu Ram said, Krutam Hanumata Karyam Sumahad Bhuvi Durlabham Manasa Apiyad Annena Nashakyam Dharanitale. So first of all, Prabhu Ramchandra lauded the effort of Hanumanji. He said that Krutam Hanumata Karyam, he said, this Hanumanji, he has done very great work, Mahat Karyam, rare on earth. It says that Bhuvi Durlabham, very very rare on earth. And Manasa Api Yad Anyena Na Shakyam Dharanitale. He said that what to speak of actually doing this service. Nobody can even in their mind think of doing this service. And this service has been done by Hanumanji. So thus, the Lord appreciated the wonderful effort that has been put in by Hanumanji in locating the whereabouts of Mother Sita. So that was the beginning of the service that Hanumanji rendered. Greatest service which nobody else could do. Nobody else could do. And then Prabhu Ramchandra goes about giving classification of servants of kings, which we can adapt also for disciples and service to the spiritual master. So first of all, he said that there are three classes of servants or those who can render service. So first we will go to the third category to which I belong. So I would like to discuss that first. Niyukto nrupate karyam na kuryadya samahitaha bhrutyo yukta samarthascha tamahu purushadhamam purusha adhamam. So people dub that servant as the lowest of men who, though qualified and capable, does not, when entrusted with duty, carry out the behest of king or the master with composed mind. So a person who has got the necessary qualifications but does not carry out the instructions of the spiritual master, he does whimsically what he wants to do. Such a person is Purusha Adhamam. He belongs to the lowest category of persons. He is capable of giving more, but he doesn't give that. He doesn't give his service. He just does some stuff as service. Or sometimes he doesn't even do the instruction given. So he is the lowest of the low. So who is the middle one? Yo niyukta param karyam na kuryat nrupate priyam bhrutyo yukta samarthasya tamahu madhyamam naram. So the middle category, the golden mean, who is he? The wise speak of that servant as a mediocre man who, though qualified and capable, does not, when confided with some work, accomplish any other work liked by the king. So this situation is like this. So a work has been assigned, a job has been assigned to somebody. He does that work very easily. He does that work. He carries out the instruction. But there is something else which he could have easily done while doing that work. He doesn't do it. A king, you know, gives an assignment. He does the assignment, but there is something else the king would have liked him to do. He doesn't do it. Similarly, the spiritual master gives an instruction. We are adapting, extending. So spiritual master gives some instruction. So the disciple does that seva, he does that service. But while doing so, he could have done something else, something better. He doesn't do that. So in Marathi, there is a word, sankamya. Sankamya, that means, you know, he does things that has been given and nothing more. So this is the middle path. Huh? And then who is the best? Who is the best? Yohi brutyo niyuktasan Bharta karmani dushkare kuryatadanu ragena tamahu purushottamam. So who is purushottama among the servants? Who is the best among the servants? So they speak of that servant as the foremost among men who, when entrusted by his master with a duty difficult to perform, does even more, of course, in consonance with that work. So this is the highest, high grade, top grade servant. He is dasa dasanu das, but he is also uttama amongst them. He's the best amongst them. He does what is beyond the call of so-called duty. He does something extraordinary. And here, Prabhu Ramchandra ji is glorifying his servant Hanuman ji as a person who is Bharta Karmani Dushkare. The assignment that was given to Hanuman ji was not very easy. It was a very difficult assignment. It was not, first of all, easy to jump so many yojanas across the sea, go across the sea. Crossing over was not very easy. And it was not that when he took off, you know, and he was sailing through the sky, things were made very easy for him. It was not easy. He faced so many obstacles. There were ogresses wanting to swallow him. And then there were others who wanted him to take rest for some time, compulsory rest, take rest. All those obstacles he transcended with that determination, absolute determination, vyavasaya atmika buddhi. He knew that his sole occupation was simply to find Mother Sita and report her whereabouts, convey the well-being of Prabhu Ramchandra, Lakshmana to her and come back and report it to Ramchandra. This he knew very well. So he was completely focused on that activity and he got rid of all the problems using his intelligence, super intelligence. Hanumanji is described as buddhimatam varishtam. Manojavam marutu tulyam vegam jitendriyam buddhimatam varishtam. So he is buddhimatam varishtam. He is the great personality. So he used his intelligence and all his strength and all his powers to surmount the obstacles and he went to Lanka. And after going there, he really had a tough time locating Mother Sita. He went through the impenetrable fort of Lanka, but finally he was successful in locating Mother Sita. And when he located her in that Ashok Van, sitting below a tree, it was not as though that he directly went and accosted her. He knew that she was in a frightened state of consciousness because day in and day out Ravana was coming and threatening her. He was wanting to, you know, enjoy her and he was threatening her about Prabhu Ramchandra. So she was not in that state of mind. But he used his intelligence and reciting Ramakatha, he won her attention. And in a very mild and in a very pleasant way, he introduced himself as the servant of Prabhu Ramchandra. And that way, he gave confidence to Mother Sita. Not only that, he gave her an assurance that, you know, Ramchandra will come and take her back. So this shows the greatness of the servitude that was offered, that service which was, you know, offered by Hanumanji to Mother Sita. So this was an extraordinary quality. Not only did he locate Mother Sita, but he also did something more. He found out the strength and weaknesses of Ravana during that his sojourn in Lanka. Not only that, he put the fear of Prabhu Ramchandra in the heart of Ravana. Ravana was scared good and proper by the way Hanumanji not only thrashed his demoniac soldiers, but he also burnt Lanka. So he really put the fear of Prabhu Ram in the heart of Ravana. So thus he accomplished so many things. So he did more than what was expected of him. And therefore, Prabhu Ramchandra became very, very pleased with the service that was rendered by Hanumanji. That is for that reason that when it comes to Dasyam, Hanumanji becomes our role model. So Lord Ram said that I don't have anything to give you. But he said that Esha Sarvasya Bhutastu Parishvango Hanumata Mayakalamitam Prapya Dattastasya Mahatmanaha. He said that all that I can give you, Hanumanji, is that I can give you this embrace, which is all that I can call my own. I have nothing else to give you. I am in Vanvas, I have nothing to give you, but I can embrace you. And he offered that embrace to that Mahatmana, Hanumanji, who is actually his Das. Ityuktva Priti Vrishtango Ramahatam Parishvajai. So he embraced Hanumanji. So this was the recognition that Hanumanji got for the wonderful service that he rendered to Prabhu Ramchandra. So this is the quality of service, wherein it is not that we just carry out the instruction of the spiritual master, but we try to do something more, something extraordinary. So the same wonderful qualities we find in several examples in Vaishnava Sampradaya. So I would like to share with you some of the pastimes which were there in Ramanujacharya, his life, his pastimes. So there is a very interesting pastime in Ramanujacharya's life, and which illustrates the importance of service to one's spiritual master. The spiritual master may sometimes, by spoken words, give us instruction. Or sometimes he may not speak about it, but yet we know what we have to do. So all these things get very revealed nicely in Ramanujacharya's pastime. So when Yamunacharya, who was the leader of the Vaishnavas in Srirangam, and over a period of time he was aging very fast, he became very, very old, and he knew that some other leader has to take his place. But he had seen Ramanujacharya only once, and Ramanujacharya had not met him at all. So one day, Yamunacharya called one of his favorite disciples, and his name was Mahapurna. So he called Mahapurna and expressed a desire. He said that you go to Kanchipuram and please bring this dynamic, young, very, very pure-hearted Ramanujacharya. I want him to get the association of Vaishnavas of our congregation. That is, in the ashram of Yamunacharya. So as soon as Mahapurna, a great Vaishnava, to whom Ramanujacharya turned for instruction later on, so Mahapurna immediately offered his obeisance to Yamunacharya and set for Kanchipuram, where Ramanujacharya was residing, where he was actually rendering service to the deity there. So when Mahapurna reached Kanchipuram, it took him 4 days to reach that place. And when he reached Kanchipuram, at that time, he went and he offered his obeisances to Varadaraj, deity of the temple there. And when he offered his obeisances and when he was coming out, he met his god brother, whose name was Kanchipurna. So they hugged each other with great love. And as they were walking, they saw this effulgent looking young personality, Ramanujacharya, proceeding towards the same temple to offer his worship to Varadaraj, the deity, presiding deity. So Ramanujacharya would every day offer water to the deity there. So he was going in that direction. So when he was going like that, Mahapurna, he started chanting one of the compositions of Yamunacharya, which is called as Stotra Ratna. He started chanting beautiful hymns from that text. And when Ramanujacharya heard those verses, he was virtually transfixed. So he asked this Mahapurna, he said that, which are these beautiful hymns you are chanting? So Mahapurna said, this composition is by Yamunacharya, my spiritual master. And then Ramanujacharya, when he heard that is from Ramanujacharya, he started greatly praising Yamunacharya. And then after some time, he invited Mahapurna to his residence, and he invited Kanchipurna also. So they stayed at his house. And then Mahapurna revealed the purpose of his visit. He told Mahapurna that I have come here to take you back, to Yamunacharya, who wants to meet you. So Mahapurna asked him that it seems the health of Yamunacharya is not very good. He said, yes, his health was not good, but at this point in time, it seems to be good. He wants to meet you. Please come. If you want, we can go back to your house and you can come later on. Ramanujacharya said, nothing doing. If that great soul Yamunacharya wants to meet me, I am willing to come right now. All that I want to do is go to Varadaraj DT, offer my obeisances, take his permission to come with you. So he ran to the DT. He was so excited that he is going to meet Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya was not his guru. He had never seen him. But in his heart, he gave him the position of a guru. So he came back to Mahapurna and this Ramanujacharya, immediately they started for Srirangam. Once again, it took them close to 4 days. So as they were going towards the ashram of Yamunacharya, they saw a huge crowd which was blocking the pathway. So Mahapurna asked one of the bystanders, he said, why is there such a big crowd? He said, don't you know that Alabandhara, the great personality Yamunacharya, has left this material world and gone back home, back to Godhead. Don't you know that? So when this was announced, Ramanujacharya fainted, unconscious on the road. And Mahapurna was in great anguish. He was stunned totally. But after some time, he composed himself and he saw that Ramanujacharya had fainted and he had to be revived. So he went and fetched some water and sprinkled water on him and then revived Ramanujacharya. And then he told him that whatever has happened, you have not been able to meet the great master, but this is the will of the Lord. So don't become distressed. Let us both go and pay our homage. So both of them started walking towards River Kaveri. And on the bank of the Kaveri laid the body of the remains of Yamunacharya. And it is described that even though Yamunacharya had left his body, but his face was still effulgent and the shadow of death was nowhere in sight. So Ramanujacharya stood there totally transfixed, simply gazing at Yamunacharya, with whom he could not converse, with whom he could not talk at all. And he knew that Yamunacharya wanted to meet him. So he was just thinking there, just looking at the body, features of Yamunacharya. Just then he happened to see that the three fingers of Yamunacharya's right hand were closed, they were clenched. So Ramanujacharya asked the people, the disciples, he said, is it that Yamunacharya always had three fingers like this clasped during his lifetime? The disciples said, no, it never happened like that. This has never happened before. We never saw him like that. It is only now. We are not able to understand why he has clenched his three fingers. And the entire crowd of people who had gathered there, they looked up to Ramanujacharya. Somehow they felt that Ramanujacharya was directly in presence of Yamunacharya, though he had left his body. It's a wonderful feeling which the people got. And then Ramanujacharya made three declarations, very loud declarations he made there. So the first declaration, mind you, Yamunacharya is not his guru, he had not been initiated, but he held him in that esteem. So the first declaration was that, Ramanuja said, that remaining fixed in devotion to Lord Vishnu, I shall free the people from illusion by spreading the glories of Lord throughout the land. He said, I'll spread the glories of the Lord, but before that, I myself will become first the fixed devotee of the Lord. Why did he say that? Because earlier he was associating with, he was a great transcendental personality, but earlier he was under the influence of a Mayavadi for some time. Therefore he said this, I'll become fixed myself. Though already he was fixed, he made that statement. Then as these words were spoken, the first finger relaxed and it opened. And then he made a second statement. The second statement was that to establish that there is no truth which is superior to the Supreme Lord, I will write a Bhashya, Shri Bhashya, commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Matta Parataram Nanyat Kinchidasti Dhananjaya. So there is no truth which is superior to the Supreme Lord. So here Ramanujacharya made an assurance. He said that I will write this Bhashya, Sri Bhashya. And then when he made this promise, the second finger relaxed and opened. And then Ramanujacharya made an unusual declaration. He said that I will name one of the learned Vaishnavas as Parashar. I will name him after Parashar. Parashar is the great personality who has written the Vishnu Purana, who has glorified Vishnu. So I will name one person after his name. Then the third finger relaxed. So people were amazed at seeing these happenings. Here is a so-called person who has left his body, and we find that there is this transcendental communication at the subtle level of the soul between a great personality, Ramanujacharya, and Yamunacharya. So the people understood that it will be Ramanujacharya who will complete the unfinished work of Yamunacharya. That conviction people got out of this particular pastime. So later on, Ramanujacharya became a great leader of Vaishnavas, a wonderful leader of Vaishnavas. He made many, many disciples, and he spread the holy name of the Lord everywhere. So thus he kept his first promise made to Yamunacharya. He became a great devotee himself, and he made others into devotees. So the first promise was honored. And then came the second promise, that he would write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Sri Bhashya. So one day he was in his ashram, and he was surrounded by his disciples. And he said that years ago I had made a promise to Yamunacharya that I will be writing a commentary, but unfortunately I have done nothing about it. I have to do it. I have to honor whatever I have said. And he said that the difficulty is that to be able to write this commentary, I need a text called Bodhayana Vritti. And this Bodhayana Vritti, only one copy is available, and that is available at Sharda Peeth in Kashmir. So unless I have an access to that, there is no way I can write the commentary. So thus, he was saying, and at that time, it so happened that one of his most favorite, great disciple, Kuresh, was with him. He said that I have to make a trip to Sharda Peeth, and I can take only one person with me, and I will take Kuresh with me. So both of them set out. You can imagine, they set out from Srirangam, which is in the south, and they had to go to the north, to go to Kashmir, to Sharda Peeth. So they set about, they started walking. In those days there were no Boeings or any helicopter or trains. They had to walk the hard way. They would rest at night at some Brahmana's place, honor Prasad, and again start walking. This way they walked, and finally reached Sharda Peeth, which is in Kashmir. They reached that place. And after reaching that place, they were very much respected, the disciples. There is this philosophy, is impersonalistic philosophy. And the people there welcomed him, because such was the effulgence of Ramanujacharya that they had to welcome him. They welcomed him, made him comfortable. And after some time elapsed, Ramanujacharya very gently requested them. He said that I understand that you have this book called Bodhayana Vritti. Will you kindly give it to me? So as soon as this request was made, the people there became very alert. They were on red alert. They said that this book was available with us in our library until recently, but now unfortunately it has been eaten by worms and that book is not available. In fact, they told brazen lie to Ramanujacharya, because they were afraid that if Ramanujacharya has an access to that Bodhayana Vritti, he is going to write his commentary on that, and that is going to completely smash impersonalistic philosophy. So they said that it has been eaten by moths and it has been eaten by worms. So this is how they defended, they wanted to defend their impersonalistic philosophy. So when this news was given to Ramanujacharya, he became very, very morose, very sad. He said that, I have come all the way. I wanted to fulfill this desire, unfulfilled desire of Yamunacharya. I wanted to fulfill. But now I can't do it because that Bodhayan Vritti is not available. That night, Mother Sharda, goddess, she herself appeared before Ramanujacharya with the copy of Bodhayan Vritti. And she said, Ramanuja, here is this copy of Bodhayan Vritti. Take it and leave this place immediately. If only these people come to know, they will confiscate it and you will not be able to accomplish whatever you want to accomplish. So, being so directed, next day morning, they said, Albida, took leave of these people and they left. They left. They started virtually running very, very fast. They started going towards their destination, which is Sri Rangam. So every day they would walk. During the day they would walk. At night they would take rest. So this was the process going on. And here what happened was that the followers, the residents of this Sharda pit, they started one day going to the library and they found that this Bodhayan Vritti was missing. They are shocked. They realized that this must have been taken. They thought that Ramanuja had taken it, but actually he had not taken it. It was given to him by Mother Sharda. But they said that we must retrieve that copy. So they literally chased after Ramanuja and Kuresh. And they found, they came to the spot where Ramanuja and Kuresh were residing. And then they asked Ramanuja, do you have this Bodhayan Vritti with you? Now Ramanuja was a pure Vaishnava. He was not going to tell a lie like they told him. So he said, yes, here it is. And without much ado, they confiscated that and they went back. Once again, Ramanujacharya was in great distress. It was not material distress. It was transcendental distress. Not being able to fulfill a promise that has been made to Yamunacharya. But just at that time, he happened to look at Kuresh, his disciple. Somehow or the other, Kuresh was not unaffected. He was unaffected. In fact, he seemed to be smiling. So Ramanuja asked him, how come? How is it that you are in this mood when Bodhayan Vritti, for which you have struggled, come all the way, has been taken away? How you are in this mood? He said, Guru Maharaj, every day night when you are taking rest, I was going through this Bodhayan Vritti and I have learnt it by heart. I can transcribe it totally. So when he heard this, Ramanujacharya became very, very happy, very pleased with him, and he held him in a tight embrace. He said, you have done something which was least expected. Something like what Hanumanji has done, but much more. Because here, Kuresh was not told that you should read it, you should memorize it. But he knew that this is what my spiritual master wants and I have to fulfill his desire somehow or the other. And he fulfilled that desire. And he transcribed it, and then a text of this Sri Bhashya was written by Ramanujacharya, which is honored and read even today in Vaishnava Sampradaya. So thus the second promise made was fulfilled by Ramanujacharya. And then the third promise was that he would name one eminent Vaishnava. So this Vaishnava was none other than Kuresha's son. Later on, Kuresh, he became a grahastha. He married a girl, I think her name was Andal or something like that. So he married that woman. They had no children, but somehow by the grace of the Lord, they got twins, and the first of the twins was named as Parashar, and the second was named as Vyas. So thus, we find that Ramanujacharya fulfilled all the promises that he made to Yamunacharya. This Parashar, after the departure of Ramanujacharya, he became very famous, a very learned scholar. He was called as Parashar Bhatt, and he became the leader of Vaishnava community. So thus we find through this story two examples. One of Ramanujacharya, who had not taken initiation, but he had so much reverence for Yamunacharya that he wanted to render service to him, fulfill his unfulfilled desires which were not even known to his own disciples. How great is Ramanujacharya? And then we have this wonderful example of Kuresh, who rendered this beautiful service where no words were spoken, nothing was communicated, and yet he served his spiritual master. So this way we understand that service to the Supreme Lord is actually achieved by service to the spiritual master. Do I have some more time? Then the third example which I would like to give is that of Srila Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami is one of our Shad Goswamis, the most scholarly, learned personality whose books became popular all over the world. Most of the important libraries have Jiva Goswami's books. So, Jiva Goswami was actually the nephew of Sanatan Goswami and Srila Rupa Goswami. So, when he came to Vrindavan, he wanted to be initiated. So, he first approached Sanatan Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami directed him to Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami initiated him. So, after initiating him, he made him perform the most menial services to make him eligible. Later on, he became a renunciant, he became named Jiva Goswami. So it so happened that once in Vrindavan, there came a so-called learned scholar whose name was Rup Narayan Saraswati. Now this Rup Narayan Saraswati was like Digvijayi scholar, like Keshav Kashmiri, we have heard of, how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated him and humbled him. So this was another such learned pandit whose name was Rup Narayan. And this person would go from place to place and he would debate with everyone. He would debate and defeat them. And after defeating them, he would ask for a Jayapatra. That means a certificate of victory on which they would sign and say that we are defeated. This was his way of humiliating people. So he had scholarship. He was learned in that sense. So he became very, very famous. And once he heard that there are two great renunciants in Vrindavan whose names are Sanatan Goswami and Rup Goswami, who are greatest of scholars, he thought that my victory will not be complete until such time as Sanatan Goswami and Rup Goswami enter their names in my Jayapatra. So he went to Vrindavan. After going to Vrindavan, he challenged Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. He said, come and debate with me. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami realized that here is a Shabda Pandit, Panditya. So that we don't want to have anything to do with you. So they declined. They said, no. You are such a great scholar and we are all very ordinary people. Whereas the truth of the matter was that they were the greatest scholars living. But they said, no, we don't want to fight with you. You are such a great personality. We don't want to fight with you. Then they said, that Rup Narayan said, that if this is the case, you have to sign your names in my Jayapatra. They readily signed and gave. They didn't want anything to do with this person. So this man came out, started bragging. He said that this Sanatan Goswami and this Rup Goswami, they are just show-offs. They are not scholars at all in the first place. Had they been scholars, they would have accepted my challenge. He started bragging all over. And then somehow or the other, there was an encounter with Jiva Goswami, to whom also he bragged. He said that your Sanatan, your uncles, supposed to be great scholars, they have signed my Jayapatra. So when he started bragging like that, Jiva Goswami could not take it. He said, this is too much. This man is bragging so much, but actually he is just, like a bloated balloon. And all that you require is to prick it and, just that bubble will burst, the balloon will burst. So he said that, I accept your challenge. I'd like to debate with you. And then for 7 days on the banks of Jamuna, there was a debate between Jiva Goswami and this Rupa Narayan. And at the end of it, this man was completely smashed. He was smashed to such an extent, he ran away from Vrindavan, never to come back again. So Jiva Goswami, in one sense, was very happy that he had redeemed the fair name of Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami as the greatest of the scholars. And he had redeemed Vaishnavism itself by properly defeating this fellow, bloated individual. So he wanted to share this news with Rupa Goswami. So when he went to Srila Rupa Goswami and said that this is what has happened, Rupa Goswami was not happy. In fact, he became very angry with Jiva Goswami. He said that, what kind of a Goswami are you? You have tried to assert yourself and defeat this man in debate. You are not a renunciant in the true sense of the word. You leave now. You are banished. So Jiva Goswami was banished. Now it is not as though that Jiva Goswami had done it to exhibit his scholarship. In the heart of his heart, he wanted to redeem the name of Sanatan Goswami and his guru Srila Rupa Goswami. But when he was chastised badly and banished, Jiva Goswami did not offer any protest. He became very, very humble. He became silent. He offered his obeisances and immediately quit that place to live in Mathura in the hollow of a tree. And he performed such great austerities that it was unbelievable. So Sanatan Goswami happened to know about this. And one day he came to Srila Rupa Goswami. He said to Rupa Goswami, he said that, you kindly please recite what all things Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given. His instructions you please recite one by one. Rupa Goswami said, you want me to recite his instructions? Rupa Goswami regarded Sanatan Goswami as his guru. He said, I'll carry out your instruction. And he started reciting various instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one by one. And then finally, he came to a point which talked about Name Ruchi, Jive Daya, and what is the third one? Vaishnav Seva. He came to that point. So as soon as he came to Jive Daya, Sanatan Goswami stopped Rupa Goswami. He said, Jive Daya means compassion to all living entities. So there is no differentiation. Ayam Nijaha Paro Vyakti Ganana Lagu Chetasam. There is no discrimination. The laghu, narrow-minded people think this is mine, that is his. So he didn't discriminate. He said that this is compassion to all living entities. Jive Daya. So he emphasized Jive Daya and brought home the point to Rupa Goswami that he is not shown compassion to the other Jiva. That is Jiva Goswami, who is there languishing in Mathura away from association of Sanatan Goswami and his dear spiritual master Rupa Goswami. Immediately Rupa Goswami realized what Sanatan Goswami was trying to get at. He laughed and he said, all right, I'll get Jiva Goswami back. And thus Jiva Goswami was brought back. So there are people who have written that Jiva Goswami, if he was a Goswami, he should not have challenged the scholar. He should have also acted in the same manner as Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami acted. But Srila Prabhupada has clarified that Jiva Goswami did not challenge that scholar out of pride or to exhibit his scholarship. He did it to vindicate the fair name of Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami. So we find here an example of service to one spiritual master. This was not an instruction given by Rupa Goswami. Redeem my name, redeem, you know, Vaishnavism. But still, Jiva Goswami went out of the way and did this very wonderful service. So, there are more things which one could talk about, but I would like to conclude with my homage to Srila Prabhupada. So, Srila Prabhupada, take the example of his Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he got just two instructions from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. One instruction was that he should go to the West and preach the gospel of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in English language. This was one of the instructions Srila Prabhupada received. And the second instruction that he received when he was with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in that Bagh Bazar area where we had a temple. So there Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, especially he was in anguish because his disciples were fighting over facilities. He told Prabhupada that if ever you have money, you print books. So basically, we can think in terms of these two instructions that were given to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada made these two instructions his heart and soul. For years together, several years, he was a grahastha first, then later on he became sannyasi. He somehow or the other could not fulfill these spoken, expressed desires of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was carrying the flame in his heart, but he could not fulfill the desire. So then when he was 69 years old, at that time, all these years, he was somehow trying to get a ticket. He was in such dire, as a sannyasi, he had no possessions. He was in such dire poverty, somehow or the other, he wanted a ticket to go to the United States. And then he approached Sumati Murarji, who completely discouraged him and dissuaded him. He said, Swamiji, don't go there. You will die there if you go there. But that burning flame was there to satisfy the desire, fulfill, serve the instruction of the spiritual master. So somehow or the other, she was persuaded to give that ticket on the cargo ship. And this pure devotee of the Lord, on the cargo ship Jaladut, suffered heart attacks, suffered nausea, all kinds of problems. So his journey, he also crossed the ocean like Hanumanji, but his journey was not at all comfortable. It was filled with so many problems. But Prabhupada was rock solid in his determination, in his vyavasayatmika buddhi. So somehow or the other, he made the journey and he landed in the United States. And on the Jaladuta, he composed that famous prayer in which he says that, O Lord, I do not know why you have brought me here. I do not know whether I will be able to deliver what they want. Because these people are so materialistic, what can I do? So he prayed like that. And he went to New York. And after going there, this penniless, who was almost like a beggar, who begged for a ticket, this great pure devotee, who is a Jagat Guru, he begged for a ticket from Sumati Murarji. And then he managed to reach United States. And after going there, from nothing, just some 40 rupees, some dry grains, and his set of books of Srimad Bhagavatam, his notes on Bhagavad Gita, this was all that he possessed, nothing else. From that state of nothingness, he built this wonderful structure of ISKCON. So many temples. There was practically nothing. From nothing, he created all this wonderful ISKCON. So we can see that not only did he preach in English language, which was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he also published books. He started Back to Godhead magazine. He built temples. He built community farms. He did much more than what was expected of him, what was the express desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this is Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, who also did dushkara jobs, very, very difficult jobs. So I am tempted to juxtapose one word in the verse which Prabhu Ramchandra speaks. I don't have the authority, but I just feel like doing it. It is a temptation. I would like to succumb to it. Kritam Prabhupadena karyam sumahad bhuvi durlabham manasapi yad anyena nashakyam dharanitale. Prabhupada accomplished that which we can't even imagine. Manasa, even in our mind we can't think of. So I am just 66 years old and I find it a struggle to reach Radha Gopinath temple from Khar. So you can imagine the grandeur and greatness of this personality, Prabhupada, who went there. So he achieved something which his achievements cannot be catalogued. He achieved something which even with our mind we cannot achieve. So this is the greatness of Srila Prabhupada. And then in this article which His Holiness Giriraj Swami has written, he makes some very wonderful statements which I would like to quote. He says here that what was the spirit of Srila Prabhupada? He was ready to do anything to spread Krishna consciousness. And he inspired in us the same spirit so that we were ready to do anything to assist him. Not only did Srila Prabhupada exhibit that spirit, but he inculcated that spirit in his disciples. Because of which some of us are here today. If I am sitting here and trying to pretend that I am giving a class, it is the mercy of a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj. So he inculcated the same spirit in his disciples as well. And in this article, which is very beautiful, Giriraj Swami talks about the way in which his disciples wanted to serve Prabhupada. The same spirit, where they just wanted to stretch themselves and do things which would please Prabhupada. So, with your kind permission, I would like to read whatever has been given here. So, it is about Malti Mataji, Her Grace Malti Mataji. So, Malti's constant meditation was how to make prasadam come out nice so that Srila Prabhupada would be pleased. So, pleasing Prabhupada, that is the substratum of a disciple of Prabhupada. And every day Srila Prabhupada would point out the defects in her service so that she could improve. But she felt that he was criticizing her. And she felt that she could never get it right. Then one day she thought that she had finally managed to cook everything properly and arrange the plate just to Srila Prabhupada's standard. She brought the plate of prasadam to Srila Prabhupada. But when she came to remove the plate, he said, "There is too much salt." Not that there was too much salt in the food, but there was too much salt placed on the plate with the pepper and ginger and lemon slices. So the next day, so she decided that I will tell Srila Prabhupada that from tomorrow onwards, I am not going to cook. And when she took that decision, she felt relieved. But next day, Malti heard that some of Srila Prabhupada's god brothers were coming to join him for lunch. So she assumed that she would not cook that day, because Srila Prabhupada had been under criticism from his god brothers for keeping a woman in his ashrams and for having a woman cook. But Srila Prabhupada called her to tell her that what items he wanted her to cook that day as usual. She was dutiful, so she decided, "Well, I'll just cook today and then I'll tell him tomorrow that I'm going to cook." So she cooked. And when the prasadam was ready, Malti lifted up the cloth that separated the work area from Srila Prabhupada's room. There she saw Srila Prabhupada sitting on the floor at the end of the room with two of his god brothers on either side. Srila Prabhupada appeared to her like the diamond in a gold setting, flanked as he was by his esteemed god brothers. And she felt intimidated by the presence of such venerable Vaishnavas. Already on her knees, she pulled her sari over her head and arms so that only her hands showed, and with her knees and elbows on the floor, she carried Srila Prabhupada's plate of prasadam with her outstretched hands, practically crawling between the god brothers to approach her spiritual master. Then Srila Prabhupada said to his god brothers, "Yes, she cooks for me." Prabhupada was not ashamed or did not want to give any explanation that a lady cook was. His heart was so pure, he was a pure devotee. He said, "Yes, she cooks for me." And he was saying it to his god brothers who were criticizing him, that "She cooks for me." And then he paused and he said, "And I criticize her." And then he said something great. Prabhupada said, "But she would slit her throat for me and I would do the same for her." He said that Malti Mataji would not mind slitting her throat for Prabhupada. That was the extent of her service attitude. And he said that "I don't mind doing it also for my disciple." So this is the wonderful exhibition, I will not say exhibition, the wonderful relationship between Guru and Shishya, which rises above all designations of man, woman, American, African, all designations are bypassed. And only the relationship remains at the level of the soul. So that was given to us by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and it is coming down to us through His disciples also. Finally, I would like to conclude a pastime of Srila Giriraj Maharaj, which he describes in the same article. And in this article, he mentions, in fact, he was asked a question. So that this is a part of a talk which was given in Los Angeles temple. So he was asked a question. He was asked to narrate one of his own pastimes. And then that pastime was narrated by Giriraj Maharaj. He said, "There is a sweet story that comes to my mind when he was in Gorakhpur with Srila Prabhupada and his other disciples. So when in Gorakhpur, Srila Prabhupada, he had a very earnest desire to prepare an altar for his deities, which are made out of brass. They were called as Radha Madhav deities. So Prabhupada was wanting that there should be a nice altar made for his deities. And he told some of his disciples. But somehow or the other, this did not happen. But the thought of preparing an altar for his deities in Prabhupada's heart was very, very strong. Days passed, however, nothing was happening. Finally, Srila Prabhupada became so concerned that he took the matter into his own hands and organized the construction of the Simhasan. Kausalya Dasi, who was the deity's pujari, got a large table which he thoroughly cleaned. Then Srila Prabhupada had us get long bamboo poles to tie the table's four legs and string to connect the tops of the bamboo poles. Srila Prabhupada then asked Haimavati Dasi for her two best saris, one to drape across the top as the roof and one to drape over the front as the curtain. Finally, Srila Prabhupada wanted branches of trees and bushes to tie to the bamboo poles as decorations. Giriraj Maharaj describes, "I was relatively new and not that capable of doing other services. So I, along with another man, was sent to bring back branches. It was already about 5 o'clock in the afternoon and getting towards sunset, but I didn't know when to stop. I was quite new and could not determine how much to bring or when to stop." So Giriraj Maharaj and his co-disciple, his god brother, went on bringing branches of trees. But he didn't know when to stop. He just went, he was dumping and going back, well into the night. See the innocence of the disciple, sheer innocence of the disciple, where he doesn't know anything else except to please the spiritual master by doing the assignment. He kept on bringing it well into the night. But when they came inside, they saw that the altar was already decorated and people were already, you know, relaxing after the whole thing was over. So he did not know what to do. So he didn't touch the devotees. He said that he came. Srila Prabhupada was in such an ecstatic mood. I think he was really pleased that we finally had made an altar for the deities. He saw me coming up and it was late. And I guess he figured that I was really trying to bring back a good bunch of branches. I dropped them onto the floor. He was smiling and beaming and it touched me. He didn't touch devotees very often. There are some of his early devotees he did touch, but it was only twice in my experience in Krishna consciousness that he touched me. He was very pleased. He said, "Thank you very much." And he touched my shoulder. That was a nice experience. So Srila, to His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, the success of his service was that Prabhupada affectionately touched him and said thank you to him. So this is the service which we have to render to spiritual master, who is the transparent via media, who throws open the windows to the spiritual world. So thankfully, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by mercy of His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, we have received this rare gift of Krishna consciousness, a rare jewel of Krishna consciousness, and it is up to us to serve our spiritual master and serve Srila Prabhupada very nicely and see that the good fortune that we have is given to others. Hare Krishna. I once again thank His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu for giving me this opportunity to serve. Hare Krishna. So there is a question. If there are some questions, there is one written question. Prabhuji, you mentioned in your lecture that a first class servant does something extra. My question is that at our neophyte level, do we need to take the risk of doing something extra because we might make a blunder instead of doing something extra? Shouldn't we confirm and do everything with blessings? Yes. The answer is that in our consciousness, we should always be wanting to do something more than what we are doing. Always striving, if our spiritual master has instructed us to chant sincerely, so we should be striving to do that. If our spiritual master has not expressly told us to associate with devotees, but since he has given this instruction through his lectures and through other processes, we should associate with devotees and please him. He may not have expressly told you personally, associate with devotees, but that instruction is there. So yes, in our neophyte stage, when we try to do something extra, we might commit blunders. So there, a degree of maturity is required when we start doing these things. Now, if Kuresha did what he did, it was not at a neophyte stage. So you have to understand that. So at a neophyte stage, we can carry out the instructions of the spiritual master to the best of our ability. That is also pleasing the spiritual master. Maybe when the time comes and when the opportunity comes, we can do that something extra which will please him even more. Hare Krishna. Is there any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.